Hey, podcast listeners. Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. With Amazon Music, you have access to the largest catalog of ad-free top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/adfreenews. That's amazon.com/adfreenews to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
The Anton Savage Show. On News Talk.
British Prime Minister Keir Starmer is touching down in Dublin today. This follows the invitation put out by Taoiseach Simon Harris when he visited Chequers on July 17th, that being, of course, the country residence of the British Prime Minister. And it is being pitched as something of a significant reset in Anglo-Irish relations. In a minute, I'm going to be talking to Bobby McDonough, former Irish ambassador to the EU and the UK. But before that, Jennifer Carroll McNeill, Minister for European Affairs and Defence, is with us. Jennifer, your hopes for the output of this meeting, what do you want it to achieve?
Well, I think what we hope it will achieve and everything we've seen so far from our British counterparts has been a new attitude, a new look forward. We've got two new leaders in Simon Harris and Keir Starmer looking together towards the future for a different relationship than perhaps the one that we've had over the last 10 years. This means a trusted partner that we can work with. It's important for business. It's important for our communities that we don't have surprises and hiccups of the kinds that we've had over the last 10 years. That we, you know, for example, the Legacy Act was a very significant disruption in our relationship. And all of those things, we know now that we have partners that we can really work with for the future. So what does that mean today? There's going to be a very significant and serious bilateral meeting between Simon Harris and Keir Starmer with their most senior advisors, most senior officials in Farmley. There's going to be a second then meeting, a round table with business across, you know, we have a very, very significant trading relationship with the UK, about 120 billion euros a year. So it's very important that the business community is listened to and heard about their experience over the last period, but much more importantly, what to look for the future. And of course, we have such important people-to-people relationships between Ireland and the UK, and the dynamic between political leaders and the trusted relationship between us is very important. It means an awful lot for Northern Ireland, for the fact that there's a programme for government there now agreed. We have North-South ministerial councils working. Our different politicians, Pascal Donoghue, Helen McEntee, Jack Chambers, have all been in London to refresh relationships. And indeed, my own counterpart, the Minister with Responsibility for European Affairs, I have met him this weekend in Slovenia. And that's something that we haven't seen for a while. And it makes a big difference. It might sound a bit up in the air or a bit nebulous, but I can tell you it makes a big difference when you have counterparts that you can see regularly, that you can have a good relationship with, and that you can deal with the practical issues that face Ireland, that face Europe, that face the United Kingdom in a much more structured, positive and forward-looking way.
So is this, at its heart, is this about a closer alignment of the two countries' policies and ideologies, or is it that the people actually like each other?
It's both. It's that you have, it's about making good relationships really matter. They matter in every environment. They matter in politics. They matter in international relations as well, because what you're always doing is dealing with somebody who wants positive outcomes with you, and that you can pick up the phone and resolve practical issues quickly. That's important for agriculture. That's important for business. It's not just nice to have. It's necessary to have, because practical issues come up all the time and they need to be resolved. But it is also about making sure that we're working together on, for example, renewable energy, that we're able to work together to look at the issues that face Europe together. So the Taoiseach, as you know, has been with President Macron, has been in Ukraine, has been in Poland, looking at the major strategic issues facing Europe. And the United Kingdom is part of that, even if it's not part of the European Union. And so our very close relationship with the United Kingdom is an important factor in looking at how we are, you know, all of the issues, the important issues, the security and defence issues, the competitiveness issues that face Europe together. So that relationship is important. And Ireland plays a special role there. Clearly, we're absolutely with the EU on all things. But it's also true to say that our very strong, close relationship with the United Kingdom is an advantage, is a positive for everybody. And that close relationship, when it's working really well, is to everybody's benefit.
Minister, before I let you go, wearing both your hat as Minister of State for European Affairs and for defence. Can I just get your reaction to the joint press conference given by the heads of MI6 and the CIA? Because it is the first time that the leaders of the two spy agencies in the UK and the US have issued a joint statement. And what they have said is that there is a reckless campaign of sabotage across Europe, and they have warned that that campaign is likely to continue. What's your reaction?
Well, I am here in Estonia this morning. I'm just about to fly back. I've been in Lithuania and Finland, visiting the Russian border, listening to the crisis management teams here, and that is what they're experiencing here. Hybrid attacks, whether it's little small things like desecration of statues or very major things like jamming GPS signals that civilian aircraft are flying through in Estonia, or fires on packages going onto planes. These are all the sort of sabotage hybrid attacks that are being discussed in this part of Europe. Ireland needs to be aware of this. People in Ireland need to be aware of this. We are an island, but as I was with the cyber defence team, actually an Irish commandant from our own defence forces working here in Estonia in a cooperative EU and NATO cyber defence strategy base, identifying to me that Ireland might be a physical island, but nobody is an island when it comes to hybrid attacks. Nobody is an island when it comes to cyberspace. And we have to think about our hospitals. We have to think about our schools. Every school in Estonia was emailed a bomb threat, and Lithuania and Latvia. And how you react to that, what that does to the school, what that does to the teachers, whether they see it as, you know, just another bit of harassment, or whether they react to it, close the school. But it's this constant, I don't want to say low-grade harassment. Some of it is low-grade harassment and some of it is very, very serious. And it's hard to distinguish. But what we've seen across Finland, Lithuania, Latvia, Poland, is that it has increased substantially over the last 2 or 3 years. It is deliberate. It is targeted. They have had to close borders and put in a different infrastructure, completely different infrastructure. I have seen images here of the border guards, Russian border guards, providing assistance to migrants who have tried a few different areas, migrants that are not coming from natural migration patterns, that have come into either Belarus or the Russian Federation and are being assisted with bicycles across different border crossings, whether in Finland or Lithuania. I was at the border yesterday in Estonia with Russia. And if you could come and see the impact that it's having on these communities, the impact that it's having on business, the way in which the Lithuanians have and Finns have had this whole of society response to trying to build up their resilience. The Lithuanians have built shelters for 40% of their population, including making sure that it's okay for disabled people. The Finns already had shelters, but Lithuania have had to do this in the last 2 years. That is the whole of society level of preparedness and resilience that they are trying to build into their communities. But they are dealing with near constant cyber and hybrid attacks of various degrees of seriousness, various degrees of harassment. And that's why I came to these countries, to see this for myself, to speak to people directly, to understand what's going on and to bring that knowledge back. I'm so glad to have the opportunity to talk to you and that your listeners can hear this, that this is the reality very, very close to Ireland. And it's something that we need to understand and prepare our own resilience in lots of different ways as well.
Jennifer Carol McNeill, thank you very much. That is the Minister of State for European Affairs and Defence, Jennifer Carol McNeill. Now, where we started, by the way, her answer there was in response to that MI6 CIA joint statement that Russia had been engaged in a reckless campaign of sabotage across Europe, which was something of a sequelae from our core discussion, which was the arrival of Keir Starmer into Dublin today. And the impact that has, because it is being characterised as a major reset in terms of the positivity of Anglo-Irish relations. As I said, I was going to be joined by the former ambassador to the EU and the UK, and he is with us this morning. He, of course, being Bobby McDonagh. Bobby, good morning.
Good morning.
Bobby, this is being characterised as of great significance. We're seeing op-eds by the Taoiseach suggesting that this is a fundamental reset, or at least that he sees it as a fundamental reset in UK-Irish relations. Is it?
Yes, I think it's part of a reset. I think you have a new Prime Minister in London, a new Taoiseach here. They have several years of cooperation ahead of them. We have a British Prime Minister who understands Ireland and our shared values far better than Boris Johnson and Liz Truss. They've engaged very quickly. We, first of all, had the meeting in Chequers in July. The Taoiseach was the first foreign leader to meet Starmer. There's an informality about the relationship as well, because they met in Chequers rather than Downing Street. Today they're meeting in Framley rather than government buildings, and they're going to a football match together. So I think the chemistry is good. They agreed in July to have an annual summit. And I think what the Taoiseach and the Prime Minister have been launching in July and again today is something that will spread right down the system to all of their ministers and the relationships that they will be having on a daily or weekly basis, and to all of the officials and to the British Embassy here and the Irish Embassy in London.
How does that work in practical terms?
In terms of the relationship in practical terms, I suppose you're talking in general terms. Irish ministers and British ministers are in regular touch with each other. They're more frequently in touch than they had to be before, because all issues, virtually all issues, apart from Northern Ireland, were dealt with through Brussels. But now, with Britain no longer in the European Union, there is more necessity for bilateral cooperation on a lot of practical issues. Officials are in even more frequent touch. So at all levels, there is a comprehensive agenda. Both the Prime Minister and the Taoiseach want to deepen relationships on all aspects of our relationship. So I don't know if there's anything more specific you want to know about how it works, but...
How does mood music at the top directly impact negotiations over policy matters? I would have thought that once you get to the level of an assistant secretary or principal officer in a government department responsible for some aspects of exports or regulation, they had a job to do. It was ever thus. They did it then, they did it, they do it now. I'm trying to see how the fact of a Prime Minister and a Taoiseach going to a football game translates into material difference in how they would do their tasks.
Well, I think the attendance of the football game is part of a wider process. As I say, it's also the meeting that took place in July between the two leaders, and the meeting that's taking place in Farnley before the football match. And so I think the football match, like the drinking of the pints of Guinness in Chequers, is very important symbolically. But they're part of this wider reset involving two leaders who want to move to a new phase. And it's possible largely because the Boris Johnson years have been left behind. And I think it offers an opportunity in substantive terms for three types of reset. First of all, a reset on cooperation in relation to Northern Ireland. Keir Starmer understands, unlike his immediate predecessors, that co-guarantorship between London and Dublin is at the very heart of the peace process. The word co-guarantorship was never used by Sunak and Johnson. And co-guarantorship is not just a principle. It's about the practical reality that it's only when Dublin and London work together that progress can be made in Northern Ireland. So I think we'll see that with the withdrawal of the Legacy Act, which Starmer has promised, which has been rejected not just by Dublin, but all the parties in Northern Ireland. We'll see it. There'll be no more kite flying about leaving the European Convention on Human Rights, which some of Starmer's predecessors tried out, and which is an essential part of the Good Friday Agreement as well. So that's the first area of practical improvement. The second will be the resetting of relations between the UK and the European Union, because that is of profound importance to Ireland as well. Ireland is part of the European Union, and the European Union is part of us. So as Starmer tries to take steps forward, like agreeing to a strategic partnership with Europe and trying to negotiate a veterinary agreement and improving the tone, leaving behind all that hugely ridiculous negative commentary about Europe that we saw from Johnson and Truss, that is also about the relationship with Ireland. It makes it possible for Ireland and Britain to have a closer relationship. And hopefully in that area, more progress would be possible over the coming years, because ideally we'd like to see the UK rejoining the Erasmus Student Exchange Programme and eventually the Customs Union and the Single Market, and possibly rejoining Europe. That's going to take quite some time, but I think it's the logical outcome of the fact that the majority of British people now regard Brexit as having been a mistake. And the third area for progress is in the practical bilateral issues which we're discussing that are under discussion and will be under discussion between Irish ministers and Irish officials in the years ahead.
You think it's a real possibility, though, that we might be at the start of, albeit a long process, but a process that leads to a return of the UK to the EU?
I don't think we're at the start of a process, because Keir Starmer is very clear that he doesn't want to start that process, certainly at this stage. He won the election on the basis of making clear that rejoining Europe or rejoining the single market wasn't on the agenda. And he was hugely successful in that. And that opens up the possibility for real practical progress in a number of areas in Britain's relationship with Europe that I've already mentioned, such as the strategic partnership. I mean, it's madness that the UK and Europe wouldn't be fully working together on the issue of Ukraine, for example, when we have so many shared values. But I'm just making the observation that it's not really plausible in the medium and long term that Britain is set on a course and is positioning itself in the world in a way that the majority of British people are uncomfortable with, especially young people. And so I'm saying, from a political point of view, Starmer is not going to raise those issues now. But I just think in the longer run, perhaps if he wins a second term in office, I think that's the logical direction of where it will eventually go.
You compared the relative positivity of the relationship now with the nadir under Boris Johnson and Liz Truss. To what extent was that low point a function of their personalities? And to what extent was it that we were used as a bit of a straw man for issues to do with Europe generally?
I don't think it was to do with them being conservatives. We've had several conservative leaders like John Major and to a large extent Cameron and indeed Chris Patten, who have understood Ireland and have performed very well. I think it was Brexit and the way in which Brexit was made into a profound ideological issue by Johnson and other people like him. And Brexit was bad enough from the Irish-British relationship point of view because Ireland was completely ignored in the process of, North and South was ignored in the process of the referendum. And that would already have damaged the relationship significantly. But the sort of nonsense that several British politicians at the time used to spout about comparing Europe to the Soviet Union or to Nazi Germany and so on, couldn't but do profound damage to the relationship. And any damage of the relationship with Europe is also damaging the relationship with Ireland.
And in specific terms for the two leaders as they stand now, are there any significant current stumbling blocks or challenges? I mean, if we go back over the last couple of years and look at things like the Irish Sea border and the challenges that came with that, and things like commonality of regulation for food and all of those things that are the legacy of the departure from the EU, are there many of those yet to be addressed?
I think, Anton, there are always issues to be addressed. I mean, in the European Union, for example, every day there are issues being addressed. There are disagreements between the member states. That's the nature of life. It's the nature of democracies. So, of course, there will be issues to be discussed and resolved. Britain has different interests from Ireland, even though they often overlap. But I think one should look at this in positive rather than negative terms. We have new leaders, we have a new atmosphere, we have the new possibility for solving those issues in a friendly and cooperative way. It's a bit like the match today, which I look forward to attending in the Aviva. It should take place in a good atmosphere. We enjoy doing things together, and yet we also have to compete. And I think that's the way the politics will be as well.
That brings us to the critical question. Does it matter who wins politically?
It matters to me, but I think a draw might be a good result from a political point of view.
Bobby, thanks very much. That is Bobby McDonough, former Irish ambassador to the EU and the UK.
The Anton Savage Show on News Talk.